Hello, it's Larry Clark from Excelsa Music Publishing, and I'm here again with another From the Composer series. And today we're talking to composer Peter Ciano, and I'm looking forward to talking to you, Peter. How's it going?
It's going great. Glad to be here with you.
Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in composition and some biographical information that might be of interest to the listeners.
Sure, Larry. I'm a music educator and composer living and working in New Jersey, where I've been working with primarily bands for the last about 20 years now. Prior to that, I went to Syracuse University, where I studied music education, had some incredible instructors there, one of which was named, I believe, Larry Clark. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
And after I graduated, I came down to New Jersey, where I had grown up, and found a teaching job at a high school, the same one I still am at, and took a while to get my feet, under me and kind of get my footing in music education and getting to know the community and learning how to, the day-to-day of being a band director and a music teacher. Right. And once I kind of got settled in, I always had an interest in arranging and composing. I, in college, certainly inspired by educators that I had. Mm-hmm. You being one of them. Sure. And I dabbled a little in writing stuff for the pep band or marching bands and stuff like that growing up and through school, and started to do it at my high school where I was teaching. And it was great because it was like a personal sort of endeavor that I was kind of something that I was interested in, and it got me more connected to the students in some ways because the kids were interested in the stuff that I was writing and they wanted to learn how to do it. And it became this great kind of community of people interested in writing music and understanding music a little bit better.
Right.
And I saw the power in that, and I dabbled in composition, but hadn't really pursued it in terms of symphonic band music or jazz ensemble or anything like that. It was more just for myself. So I thought I got to get a grad degree at some point, and why don't I study music composition and really chase this a little bit, And so I did that, and I started doing my composition master's program at NYU in Greenwich Village, right across the river, and actually I was in the, and not everybody knows this, I started in the jazz department there.
Nice.
Because I had a particular interest, in jazz ensembles all through school at Syracuse and prior to that, mm-hmm. and writing jazz music and listening. It's probably the music I listened to more than anything else. And so I studied jazz composition and performance, had some great instructors there, and started to write some jazz charts and stuff for my band and bands I was working with. And hadn't really thought about the concert band stuff at that point yet. And probably about, as I started to write stuff for the jazz ensemble, I realized, hey, this is a lot of fun, just like all the arranging had been fun. Why not try to connect myself and, better myself as a composer and arranger and write something for the symphonic band. So I did that, and wasn't until probably the last 5 years or so I thought, well, maybe I'll send it out to some publishers and get some feedback. I was mostly looking for feedback because I thought some of the stuff was okay, but I certainly wasn't well versed in it, and hadn't at the time really looked at all the particular things in terms of grade level and ranges and all that kind of stuff. I was really writing for the bands I was working with specifically, and not thinking about the greater band community. And once I started doing that, I know I sent you some stuff, and I always was very appreciative. You sent some really valuable feedback, because I don't think you always get that from some of the publishers. While they are always very nice, I didn't necessarily want nice. I wanted somebody to tell me what I was doing wrong and what I could do better, and learn from it. Because I did think it would be a lot of fun to get some of my music out there and reach more students and see what I could do in beyond my own surroundings.
Right.
And so in the last year or so, I've actually had a good amount of success in getting some pieces through, and I know I sent you a couple of pieces that you're going to be putting out with Excelsia, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. And that's where I'm at now. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. It's interesting because I started similarly, as a band director, and using my students almost as my laboratory.
Yeah.
Writing stuff for them, which, at first it was terrible, and But they didn't mind. They didn't mind. They thought it was kind of cool that, you know, the band director wrote music for them.
Yeah, I kind of had to get over that, I think, because I you know, we study music as this almost historical thing on some level, where we're like, we want to, you know, in music education, play the classics. And I think that is super important. You know, everybody should play Flourish for Wind Band, and everybody should do those things. So I think I was probably hesitant to like come across like I was trying to push my music as being on that same level or more important, or, you know, I wanted to make sure the kids were exposed to the other stuff.
Sure.
But a lot of the stuff that I ended up writing initially, I certainly didn't ever anticipate us performing even in a concert. It was more good sight reading exercises and, you know, for them. And again, composition exercises for myself. So I think there's something to be said for that. And the kids really loved playing stuff that I was writing, because here I was standing right in front of them, as opposed to some guy they'd never heard of or maybe didn't necessarily know a lot about.
Well, I think the other thing that often students miss out is they miss the connection to the composer. You know, they think composers are all old or dead, you know?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, for sure.
A personal connection to the person who wrote the music really does make it come alive for them. I think.
I think so too. And I think that in the band community, in educational system, is a very unique kind of community, because it's a place where new music is very much appreciated and thriving, I think. I mean, many band directors buy new pieces all the time. They're excited to try new things. And I'm sure they also pepper in some of the classics and all the ones that students should have exposure to as well. But I don't know if that happens a lot of places. I think even in symphonic orchestras, you know, professional groups, they're hesitant to put music out there sometimes because it might not, you know, bring the ticket sales or whatever it is that they have to consider. So I think we're lucky in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Band has sort of always been at the forefront of championing new music for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really exciting to be a part of it.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your process. How do you get started on a piece? You know, what kind of setup do you use? Do you do pen and paper first, or is it all computer? That sort of thing.
Well, when I first started, I think I'm in that age group where you know, publishing, or I guess I should say notation software, wasn't really too advanced when I was starting to do this. So it certainly was pen and paper. And then, you know, when I think Composer came out, back when I was, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of that program for the old Macintosh, the old Toaster Macs.
Right.
And I started dabbling in that a little bit, but eventually was a Finale user and then jumped ship to Sibelius probably, you know, somewhere around 15 years ago. And I wrote with pen and paper initially, and still do sometimes when it comes to melodies. I tend to write melodies first. That's, you know, some people I think write more melodically first. Some people write maybe more harmonic. I tend to write melodically first and then the other stuff comes. That's not a rule or anything. Sometimes, you know, you get an idea about a chord progression or what have you. But so I tend to, you know, jot down that melody, or now, to be honest with you, more recently, I just kind of sing it into my phone as I'm driving somewhere or whatever it is, you know, when inspiration strikes. But so once I get past that melody, I find myself trying to figure out, well, is that melody appropriate for, you know, a certain instrument or a certain grade level? And then things start to kind of go from there, I guess you could say. And that's again how it works now. I don't think I was always thoughtful about grade level and instrument. I just thought of a cool melody and I would throw it out there. And I, you know, you take your, you know, you start to learn what actually works a little bit better. And I think then you get to the point where you can think of it that way. But
yeah, the more you hear things play, of course, that helps you know what works.
That, you know, when I was up in Syracuse, and I'm sure you remember Joe Raposo, who's a great jazz educator, and he was our jazz band director while we were all there. And he was very encouraging with some of my early compositions in terms of just getting them played.
Right.
And the jazz ensemble even performed a couple pieces of mine, which in retrospect, I don't think they were that great. But what was great was the experience. And I think he saw the value in that. And I'm always grateful to him for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that certainly is the best teacher, is hearing it played by live, living, breathing human beings. And then you start to go, oh, I shouldn't do that anymore.
Right. And I mean, it's tempting to, now with, you know, I always call it Sibelius ears to my students, but you know, when you put music in, it sounds great when it comes back and you're like, yeah, this is great. I just wrote great music. And it's different when live people are playing it, you know, the technical demands and the reality of what people can play as opposed to what, you know, what the programs can play back. But, you know, it is tempting to write almost anything because now you can get such great playback. You know, you didn't always have that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that younger composers get caught up in that and
sure.
don't hear their music played live as much as they should early on. And that's the problem.
It's hard. And it's hard to sometimes get students to take music to the point where it's ready to be played. It takes a special, really determined, you know, at least high school student to come up with an idea, put it into the notation software or write it out, and then distribute it and make the copies and all that stuff. I mean, that's all part of the whole process. And I think that the kids that are willing to do that are the ones who are, you know, definitely motivated.
For sure. So obviously you're a teacher, so I'm sure schedule is always a challenge. Do you have a set schedule that you compose, nights, weekends, that sort of thing?
Sure. I mean, like you said, it's always challenging to find the time, but it's not really set. And it's like a blessing and a curse, I guess. Yeah. I think that, you know, sometimes, yeah, I'll be working on something cause I'm excited about it or have a deadline. And so I'm working on something over the weekends or at nights, but I also have a home and family life. Then you got to balance that as well. And have to always put that first. So I tend to write early personally. In general, mornings are better. I'm a little closer to the subconscious or something. And I'm a little bit more alive and awake maybe than after having gone through a full work and family day. So when I sit down at the computer and start trying to compose something at maybe 9 p.m., it's not always that good. Mm-hmm. So it's usually little segments. I'll write when I have a chance. Sometimes as a music teacher, we teach, you know, before school and after school. So I always have like a period or so in there that is built in. That's kind of a down period. And sometimes I'm able to use that time for composition, not often, but sometimes. And while it's frustrating to only have say 30 or 40 minutes to put some ideas down, it's sometimes better for me because then I will always without fail, though I don't want to admit it at the time, walk away from it and come up with, you know, as I'm thinking about it away from the computer or away from, you know, the hearing it back, I kind of come up with some different ideas and things that maybe would work better.
Right.
And then when I go back, it's kind of more refreshing. So for me, actually the little segmented compositional time isn't always a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, I think, when we were younger, writing late at night was okay. And 2 a.m. was no big deal, but I think, I think the older we get, the morning,
I'm well past that. Yeah.
The morning is better.
Yeah. First thing in the morning, the perfect, moment is probably, you know, you have your cup of coffee and you're just kind of breaking into the day and ideas are fresh and things are flowing and those are good times.
I'm not sure students that are listening to this quite understand that yet, but
no, I'm sure. I'm sure when you're younger and you have that kind of energy, you probably can write at any time and be pretty excited about it.
Absolutely.
So
I remember many a nights 2-3 a.m. just cranking away.
Oh yeah, for sure. Those days are gone.
So talk a little bit about if you feel like you get writer's block at any point and maybe some ideas about how you get past that if you do.
Yeah, no, I definitely do get writer's block. I think that's for sure. And I tend to try to just power through it because I'm so motivated by time. Like I have only so much time. So I'm willing to put almost anything down on paper or more specifically into, you know, your notation software, even if I know it's not great. The idea being that, you know, if I just keep putting stuff down, something might, you know, work out, even if it seems almost like completely unmusical at a given point. And then when I come back to it, perhaps I find something there, even if it's just a couple of notes or a theme or something like that. So I've definitely gone through periods where nothing good comes out. And I even, like I mentioned, I really have been only doing symphonic band music more recently, or at least sending it out to publishers more recently. And there was a time there where I don't think I wrote anything for a year. I was kind of, you know, sent out to some stuff to people, got, you know, mediocre feedback from most people, and then kind of just wasn't motivated for a little while there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was an ego thing. I think, you know, you never really know how your music strikes other people. And I think that for me, getting good feedback is very, you know, inspiring to my writing. And I wish it wasn't. I wish I could say that, like, oh, I'm going to write my own thing and feel good about it no matter what. But, you know, when you get a good compliment, I find that I'm a little bit more energized to write more. So, right now, as things have been going pretty well for me and some pieces have been accepted for publication, it's been a kind of a good time because I'm willing to put anything down on paper, kind of a little more confidence. And maybe not all of it's going to be great, but at least it's getting some ideas down and it's something to work with. And I think that's the key.
Well, I think if I can share with the listeners a little bit what has been inspiring to me with you is that
sure.
You've been persistent.
And thank you.
Each and every time that you sent me a piece, even though I might have said no,
yeah.
I could see improvement.
Well, I appreciate that.
Better and better and better. And I think that's just a word of wisdom for the young kids listening out there who may be interested in composition is stick with it. Do it for yourself. Do it for yourself first. And then if other people like it, that's, you know, I always say that's a happy coincidence. But you have to be, if you want to be a published composer, you have to be persistent and keep trying and keep trying. And, you know, honestly, that's pretty much most of life. You have to keep.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great compliment to me. I appreciate you saying that. And I remember you know, saying early on when I maybe had first reached out with some things that, you know, keep, if you want to do this, you make sure it's for yourself first and be persistent about it. And that stuck with me for sure. And I think, you know, I always saw it as a long-term goal. Like if it didn't happen in a year, that didn't mean it couldn't happen eventually. I was not in a rush, I guess you could say. I wanted to do it because I wanted to get better at it and I wanted to learn and do it right.
Right.
And I'm glad that some of that stuff that I sent out to people didn't get published, to be honest with you, because it's not awful, but it certainly doesn't represent where I feel I'm at now. And so I think that is a big part of it. It's just being persistent and making sure you're doing it for yourself first and getting something out of it.
Absolutely.
And like I said before, it was inspiring my teaching. It wasn't taking away from my teaching. I think I'm a much better teacher now, having written stuff and have a better understanding of music that I'm writing for kids, but also just working on with kids, whether I've written it or not. I have a little bit more insight and a little bit more background on some of the music that we're working on from other great composers. And there's so many great people to get music from these days.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the more you know as a conductor about composition, the better you can prepare that music with your students.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, I just think that in some of the clinics that I do, it's trying to teach teachers how to better pick music based on perceived quality of the craftsmanship and stuff. And they need to know a little bit about that craftsmanship in order to better, you know, better select literature for their students as well.
Right, exactly. Because the kids, I mean, sure, you might be working on, say, 6/8 time or what have you with your students. But it doesn't mean that just any 6/8 piece is going to connect with them. And they have to have some kind of it's music, it's art, right? You have to have some kind of emotional connection to the concepts that are being taught, not just this mathematical idea of what 6/8 time is. They want to sing back a catchy tune. They want to find some merit in it artistically, I think, whether Absolutely. They realize it or not.
Absolutely. Tell us if people want to find out more about you as a composer or some more background information, or if they'd like to get in touch with you to possibly commission you to write a piece for their ensemble, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Sure. So probably the best way to reach out to me is you can find me on, I'm on Facebook now. I was a digital introvert for many years, I have to be honest. but I definitely have gotten put myself out there a little bit more now with some of my pieces coming out and wanting to be available for people to reach out to me. So I am on Facebook. But I also have my own website, which is just my name, www.petersciano.com. You have to spell my name right, which is challenging. My last name is spelled Sciaino. So there's three vowels in a row there. But if you get to that website or you Google me, I'm sure you'd be able to find that website. And there's a link right to email me right through that website. And I'm happy to answer any questions or talk commission or whatever it is that you might be interested in. I'm there at your disposal.
That's excellent. Well, Peter, thank you for taking the time out of your day to talk to us about your music and your background. We certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's really a lot of fun talking to you about it.
Excellent. Again, that's another episode of From the Composer, here from Excelsior Music Publishing. I'm Larry Clark. Thank you for listening.